Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. This is going to be an empowering hour. The latest on environmental issues. We're going to take a look at 5G. It's everywhere. And it's not good. Our mayors, governors, members of the U.S. Senate, House, the presidency, going back more than 20 years, have not examined honestly and openly the actual science from their own peer-reviewed literature showing that 5G is dangerous, that Wi-Fi is dangerous. And think of all the Wi-Fi in all the schools almost at every desk. So we're going to give you the latest on that. Then we're also going to hear from a person that you never hear from anywhere in the mainstream media. You won't see profiles on them in the New York Times Sunday Magazine, where they would talk with a person about their experiences and then have whatever documentation they have that supports their position. And that is a woman whose child was vaccine injured. The consequences to her, her family, and I'm going to give you a number, and this is the latest official number. This is the government's own number through the Department of Justice that oversees, by the way, that's right, if you have a vaccine injury, you have to take on the Justice Department. And you know how utterly corrupt the Justice Department is. Just look at the recently retired head of the prosecuting attorney, the top attorney general, Barr. And how many cases did he bring against major corporations, white-collar crime? How about none? So that's who you have to go up against? You're just a citizen, a working class person, a poor person, or upper middle class? You have an injured child? Yeah, you have to run that gauntlet. Their number is this. Remember this number. 2.1 million children have been officially determined to be vaccine damaged. But there's a problem with that. I interviewed on this program the former head of the FDA, MD, PhD, and he said that only 10% maximum of vaccine adverse reactions are ever reported because it was voluntary, not mandatory. But the more realistic figure from the pediatricians I've spoken with is 2%. So if you have 2.1 million official, then could we say that at least it's 10 times that amount based upon the government's own figures of how many people report adverse reactions? Well, now you're looking at 20 million children. That's a sizable number. So let's ask a basic question. What is being done, what is being championed in Congress to look at all these injuries and deaths? How about nothing? Zero. So do they not count? Does a little child's life not count? Their injuries, their suffering, the parents. But let's double that number for parents. So now you're up to somewhere in the neighborhood, more or less, of 50 million people in the United States have been adversely affected by vaccines. If the people understood those figures, which are realistic, then you wouldn't have a single safe, or you wouldn't have a single vaccine unless it was proven safe, the cautionary principle. First, prove that your product or service is not going to injure someone. So we're going to look at that today and hear from a woman. You've never heard from this woman. I try to get you things you have not heard from, and I had to go clear to Great Britain to get this one. But also, today, if time permits, we're going to look at the results of Pfizer's tests. And they're completely unrealistic. For example, ask the average person who's rushing to get the vaccine. They all want to get the vaccine. Okay, fine. I have no problem with that. I believe in freedom of choice. I believe that it's your body and the sanctity over that body, and the choices should be yours and yours alone. So what do you believe the vaccine is doing? Is it protecting you from being infected by other people who are not vaccinated? Is it protecting other people from you? Is it preventing you from going into the hospital? The British Medical Journal wrote an article. I didn't see a single word of this anywhere in the mainstream or alternative media. I will quote you their point of view, and I will post it on PRN.fm. Also today, the cancel culture. According to the author of this, quote, the study, this is a scientific study, cancel culture decimating free speech at world's leading universities. Academics cannot speak freely of the leading subjects of their day, including on race, gender, the outcomes of elections, their views on religion, or on discrimination itself, for fear of judgments that lead to eventual penalty or censorship, end quote. This is from Summit News. I'll also be quoting today from Chris Hedges and The World to Come, from Truth Dig, from Life Extension. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. We always begin with something that all of us can benefit from, and that is understanding the role of healthy choices. One of the problems we have is that we have an elevated number of homocysteine readings in the population. HOMO, H-O-M-O, cysteine, C-Y-S-T-E-I-N-E. Now, when that's elevated, let's say it's up around the number 13, 14, 15, or higher, you're at great risk of having either a heart attack or a stroke. But the current issue, of last month's issue, of Medic Review, published the findings of a Cuban research study of a greater incidence of high homocysteine levels and low levels of several vitamins among aging people. And that led to mild cognitive impairment or Alzheimer's disease. So here's what it means. If you can lower your homocysteine level, you lessen your chances of developing dementia or Alzheimer's. Now, we have millions upon millions of people suffering from Alzheimer's and five times that amount suffering from dementia. Mind you, Alzheimer's is a type of dementia. I'll give you just the simple bottom line to it. Vitamins A, B1, B2, B12, vitamin C, and folic acid. If you can get those up, and you can, even if nothing else, just take a simple high-potency multiple vitamin. If you get more than 25 milligrams B1, B2, if you get, let's say, 500 micrograms B12 and folic acid, let's say 2,000 milligrams vitamin C, 10,000 units of vitamin A, you are going to bring down your homocysteine level. That's a good thing. And that can help your brain and turns off inflammation. Now, why is this particularly important? Because for the last 40 years, we've been taking aspirin per day. Here's what an aspirin will do. It will thin your blood. Hence, it can help prevent clotting, the aggregation of red blood cells and fats and other blood, let's say, ceroid pigments that come together, cause a clump, and they can block your arteries, either to the heart or to the brain. That then increases your risk, if that happens, of a heart attack or stroke, but if you have your blood thin, it lessens it. Here's the opposite side of that. It also destroys vitamin C, B1, B2, B6, and folic acid, the very nutrients you need to prevent homocysteine from elevation. You also have anywhere from, let's say, a low level of 20,000 to a high of 40,000 Americans dying each year from taking aspirin. So now if you took, and isn't it ironic that our cardiologist, who are expert about the heart, will help you prevent a stroke but increase your likelihood of having a heart attack? That makes no sense to me. So why not take green juices, garlic and onions, vitamin C and those coenzyme Q10, all of which help your heart, thin your blood, and lessen a heart attack and a stroke, and keep your homocysteine level down. It's such a simple solution. Occam's razor. Cut through the fat, get to the point. And that is, we don't need drugs. But we do need some drugs. They are life-saving, and they can help us. But the whole body's ability to heal is an inner process. We have to feed it and nurture it. But that's not where the money is. And as a result, that's what happens. we end up taking aspirin or some medication like a stupid statin. From the University of Queensland, which is in Australia, junk food is linked to sleep problems in teenagers, meaning that eating too much junk food has been linked with poor sleep quality in teens. And that's the University of Queensland School of Health and Rehabilitation Sciences. And a professor, Kahn, said that frequent consumption of soft drinks and fast foods has strongly associated with sleep disturbances in adolescents around the world. Quote, "This is the first study to examine unhealthy diets and stress-related sleep disturbance on a global scale in high school students from 64 countries. Wow, a high level of teens talked about sleep problems. Now, mind you, I agree, there's lots of caffeine, there's lots of sugar, you're changing the body's anabolic and catabolic process, anabolic building up, catabolic bringing it down during sleep, cleansing, lowering your metabolism, and release the melatonin. But lights in the room block that melatonin. Sounds block the melatonin. Sugar turns on the engine again of your metabolism. So that's why these energy-dense, nutrient-poor eating habits are causing not only a world of unhealthy teenagers who are going to live shorter lives many times than their parents, but end up being a part of that collective mass medical real pandemic that we have. But hey, think of it this way. More people died last year, more people will die this year from just heart disease than COVID in the United States. Yet you won't see a single effort made to reduce heart disease by prevention, because once again, everything has been commercialized. Also, for those of you who have electromagnetic sensitivities, and that's growing, according to Minya University in Egypt, antimicrobial activity of rosemary leaf extract can help with the damage caused by the 50 hertz electromagnetic field. That's good. And by the way, rosemary is known as a restorative plant that has numerous utilizations in traditional medicine. So that's good to know. And also from taurine, and taurine's a very important nutrient. And according to the latest from Life Extension, they're saying that it protects against, quote, age-related brain changes. So we're all needing healthier brain cells. We all want to help de-age our brain, turn off inflammation in the brain. So this very inexpensive supplement, taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E, has been shown to enhance this youth-restoring process. How does it do that? It's relatively simple. It's known to protect against neurotoxins. What creates neurotoxins? How about at the top of the list, alcohol in any amount? And how about being around cell phones, computers, blue light? How about being stressed and having elevated levels of cortisol? All that will cause, and eating a hamburger, a hot dog, anything you see on television, almost all of that will increase some form of inflammation in the brain. So the higher intake of taurine earlier in life associated with better cognitive function later in life. By the way, the body only makes a small amount of taurine. To boost taurine levels, it must be acquired from the diet or through supplementation. I suggest supplementation because it's so much easier to do. So what does taurine do? Well, first of all, it's an amino acid. It helps healthy cells throughout your body. It's critical for the peak functioning of the mitochondria, C-H-O-N-D-R-I-A, the power plants that supply our cells with energy. Just imagine that the mitochondria are the furnace, and whether it's wood or coal that you're throwing in there that heats up, and now the whole place has heat, the mitochondria provides energy. The mitochondria function begins to decline over the age of 30, impairing cellular function and making it harder for cells to defend themselves from stress and injury. And that's especially true for the brain, because it has such a high level of metabolic activity, the heart also. So taurine can stimulate new brain cell growth. That's good. Remember, everyone who's having memory loss or shortage of memory, anyone who's had Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, multiple sclerosis, taurine is important. It protects against excitotoxicity, meaning harmful overactivity of the brain. It defends against toxins that can damage the brain. And it minimizes brain damage caused by stroke. So wouldn't you think that all of your emergency room personnel would have taurine on standby? They should, just like they should have a hyperbaric. If you got every hospital in America, their emergency rooms, their ICUs, to have a number of hyperbaric oxygen therapy, the moment you got someone in there who had a stroke, you can limit the damage from that stroke substantially. And also it helps preserve normal cellular function and energy supply by regulating calcium and protecting cell membranes. And so through what is called neurogenesis, neuro, N-E-U-R-O, genesis, G-E-N-E-S-I-S, it keeps your brain sharp. And there are a lot of studies that show that taurine boosts creation of new brain cells. This is called neurogenesis, and it's the key to preserving healthy brain function as we age. When neurogenesis occurs during brain development, it refers to brain cells growing, dividing, and maturing. But neurogenesis doesn't stop after development. Throughout your life, we must maintain healthy, functioning brain cells. We also need to protect the connections between those brain cells. All of our brain functions, from controlling movement to high-level cognitive tasks, like speaking, learning, and remembering, require these vital connections. So as neurogenesis dwindles with age, the brain shrinks, and the critical neural connections then become diminished. And this can start the slippery slope into cognitive impairment and dementia. So we can create new brain cells, and that's good. And several cell and animal studies show that taurine helps wake up brain stem cells and stimulates new brain cell production and supports their survival. And this type of effect can be observed in both young and developing brains and in older brains. So especially it's good for the hippocampus, hippo, H-I-P-P-O, campus, C-A-M-P-U-S, which is a brain region critically important for the formation of new memories. So we need to defend our brain against excitotoxins like glutamate, which is capable of being there. Glutamate is critical for normal brain function. It sends signals between nerve cells and plays a role in learning and memory. But overstimulation of brain cells by chronic high levels of glutamate causes dysfunction, programming cell death. Taurine protects against excitotoxicity by blocking and reducing the overstimulation caused by excess glutamate. Normally, cells die after they're exposed to high concentrations of glutamate. But when pre-treated with taurine, cells survive under these conditions. So, for all reasons that I've just mentioned and more, taurine. So that's good information that can help everybody in this audience, something new that most people would not have known about. My hope is, since we have so many physicians and nurses listening, that you can apply this. And everything that I am sharing is from the peer-reviewed literature. And the reason I spell a lot of things is because, remember, we're heard all over the world. And so where English is not a first language, may not even be a second language. So I get calls, you said something and I didn't understand it. So I spell it so they can then research it, get the latest on it. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back. And when we come back from our break, I'm going to play a woman, a mother, and her experience with vaccines and how hard it was to have anyone within the medical industrial complex, nurses, doctors, no one likes to admit they've made a mistake. But we know of at least they've acknowledged 2.1 million injured children. That means at least you're dealing with 3 million people adversely affected, immediately the parents. Now, some of these are going to be neurologically damaged, so the rest of their life, they're going to have to be cared for 24/7. Some won't make it, they'll die. And that's the lowest figure, the most conservative figure you could possibly come up with. More likely, it's 9 times that amount. So, now you're looking at upwards of 27 million. That does not include siblings, does include other people. So we've got a real pandemic because of vaccines, but you wouldn't know it from the New York Times. It supports vaccines. So I'm going to take on the New York Times when we come back, and in a way that you wouldn't imagine. And so we're going to get to that. Also, I'm going to play this clip from this mother when we come back. Then you have a chance to call in on our talkback line. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-8888, and share your points of view. We believe in freedom of speech. We do not censor people. We do not screen them. I don't know who's on the line until I just get a name, and you have a chance to share your points of view. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
And I live with Ian. Now, back in 2007, we moved out of London into Kent. Not necessarily to start a family, but after a few months of living there, I fell pregnant. And we were to have our first child together. Now, I didn't have so much of a social circle around me of friends with children. So I was never really into that sort of scene. We just sort of, you know, just took every step as it came. I had an amazing pregnancy. And Alfie was born on the 14th of September.
The psychological situation, I think, is very difficult for someone who is who's a new parent. Most new parents are naive about these kinds of things and haven't had the time to study all of this. And the problem is, it's such a polarized topic of discussion now that people are either pro-vaccine or they're anti-vaccine. And people that are anti-vaccine are, of course, vilified all over the world. But there's a lot of money behind that. So you have to question what's really going on there.
Then we had the visits from the health visitor talking about vaccinations. The vaccinations, I hadn't really given them much thought. I'd always associated them and grown up with hearing that vaccinations, heal great diseases, and we were all a lot better off for these life-saving vaccines. So I didn't really give it any other thought, and we vaccinated as per the schedule. And I can remember at the time that there was no major problems with Alfie after his first lot of vaccines and his second. A little bit miserable, a little bit under the weather, but we were told that that was perfectly normal. And then at the age of 14 months, it was the time to get the MMR. And I wasn't too comfortable with the MMR because there was a lot of controversy around the MMR vaccine and the association that it was causing autism, or suspected to be causing autism. And it just felt a little bit worried about that one.
Well, I think that we're raised, at least in the West, to believe that doctors have our best interests at heart, and they have all the training that we don't have, and to think that a doctor would violate their Hippocratic Oath, which says, first of all, do no harm, is something that we can't really, I think, quite imagine. I think that the fact is that we were not exposed to the negative side of vaccinations, although there is a lot of research. Contrary to popular belief, there's lots of research out there.
But when you go online and read about measles, mumps and rubella, and you're reading the stuff and they're telling you how dangerous actually them diseases can be, it sort of puts you into a fear, into a state of fear.
The mothers know, mothers, for example, of these kids who are autistic, who know that their child was perfectly normal until that child received those vaccinations, those mothers know that they know the truth about it.
I didn't take Alfie to get hit that vaccination. It was our mother-in-law. And she said that the doctor had said to her, or the nurse had said to her, that around the 10-day mark, Alfie will start to feel a bit, might feel a bit poorly, as that's when the live part of the measles vaccine kicks in. And yeah, around about day 8, Alfie started to get angry. I'd never seen him display them feelings of anger, and there was nothing for him to be angry about. It was a frustration. And I even took photographs of it because I found it quite strange.
Well, you know, you can tell when you discuss this issue with people that there is such a visceral, like, trigger emotional reaction that they have, right? And it's, you know, how dare you threaten the health of my child by not vaccinating your child, for example. You know, it's much easier to just accept what most people are saying, especially, you know, the authority figures. You know, we're all so conditioned to trust authority. And when we see, you know, those three letters, CDC, we think that, you know, that's like our grandpa coming to make sure we're safe, you know, and tuck us in. And it's hard to look at it otherwise. It's hard to look at the truth of this because you'd have to go against so much. And you'd have to realize that those whom you entrusted, even with the welfare of your own children, have not been honest with you.
And then he was really poorly. He started on day 10, I'd gone to work, and Ian had called me at work and said that Mandy, he's not right. He's not eating, he's sleeping, he's not 100% at all. And I said, well, let's phone the doctor. So the doctor said, it's perfectly normal. It's day 10, he's had his MMR vaccine. Give him some Calpol, and if he's still not right tomorrow, we'll see him. So he'd had a low-grade temperature at that point, and we gave him a very tepid bath, tried to feed him some milk, and he wasn't really interested. So we fed him 5 mil of Calpol and put him down to bed, and we went downstairs. We had the monitor on in the room as well. We went downstairs, we had some tea, and I'd finished eating tea, and it must have been about half an hour, 40 minutes. And I said, I'm just going to go and check on Alfie. And when I got upstairs to his room, he was face down, and he was sort of all cuddled up in the corner of the cot. So I felt the back of his neck to see if he was hot or if his temperature was rising or anything like that. The temperature just didn't feel right. And as I turned him over, I realized that he'd gone. His lips were blue. His fingertips were blue. And I panicked and I picked him up and I screamed and I ran downstairs. And I didn't know what to do. And I was screaming for Ian to go and call my neighbour, who's a paramedic. And she was at work. So we then dialed 999. I'm trying to administer CPR on him, all the while the ambulance service were on the phone telling me exactly what to do. And even as I was doing it, I knew he'd gone. I knew it was fruitless. I could hear the rattling as I was giving him his CPR, and I knew he wasn't going to come back. And it took them at the hospital about 20 minutes to come and pronounce him officially dead. And the first thing I can remember saying, it was a vaccine, wasn't it? It was the MMR. And the consultant, Dr. Day, stood there and looked at me and he said, we're going to have to find out. We don't know at this stage. I said, it's the vaccine. It's day 10. He feels unwell. I said, there's nothing else wrong with him. I just couldn't understand. And I could see the nurses that had been working on him, and I could see the look in their face. I'll never forget it, as if this was not the first time they'd seen this.
There's so much money in the pharmaceutical complex, you might call it, that is geared toward moving people down one funnel, and that is to get vaccinated, and there's lots of money in that, and the common conventional wisdom is that that's healthy for you and it's good for you. And but I think it's all been built on this false premise that it was vaccines that got rid of all of these childhood diseases in the first place. But if you go back and you look at the statistics, most of those diseases were almost entirely out of the population already when these vaccines were introduced.
They said that they had to report it to the police. So when we got home, we had to wait for the police to arrive. And we had two officers turn up who told us that we weren't allowed to leave the living room, that they had to go upstairs to Alfie's room and take his bed in, his teddy bear. They grilled us on what we'd fed him, what medication we'd give him. They took him the Calpol. They took the Calpol that we'd administered, and questioned us like we'd killed him. And it took them until... They didn't leave our house until about 1 o'clock in the morning. And then they just got up, walked out, and just left Ian and I. 1 o'clock in the morning in our house, where 6 hours previously we were a family, and no, we weren't any longer. I can't really remember what happened for the rest of that night. I don't even know if I called my mum that night or whether I did it in the morning. But I can remember getting the computer and sitting there, and I googled MMR deaths. And the first thing that came up in the search was 24 cases of death recorded in the UK from the MMR vaccine. And I was like, why haven't I heard about this? Nobody told me about this. I'd always sort of, the fear that I'd initially had was the MMR was, you know, was being accused of causing autism. At no point had anyone said to me, there is a risk of death from this vaccine.
I think that, unfortunately, the age that we're living in now is an age where if you want to know the truth about something, you can't expect to just receive it on a silver platter. If you want the truth about almost anything, you have to dig. And I think we're living in an age of propaganda where there is there's more propaganda going on now than there ever used to be, ever at any time in history.
As of tonight, at least 114 cases of measles have been reported.
What are your thoughts? Mind you, that's one parent. I've interviewed over 2,000 parents who've had vaccine injured, and over 1,000 of them with autism as the outcome. The government denies, the industry denies, and the media will not allow anything to be said. Facebook will not allow anything on vaccines to be questioned, nor Google, nor will Wikipedia, nor Twitter. We're completely shut out. So all these people, the real victims, have no voice. That's why I'll provide them with a voice. You can download and watch the latest of those films award-winning documentary called Deadly Deception. And you can go a little further back, 2 years, and get Silent Epidemic, before that Vaccine Nation, and before that Autism Made in USA. Who speaks for these people? Who speaks for these children? Fortunately, we have small groups, Barbara Lowe Fisher, lots of people who their own children have been vaccine damaged. And by the way, 100% of the people whose children were vaccine damaged were pro-vaccine. Now imagine you have a completely experimental vaccine with no long-term studies, no animal studies. In one of the studies, 100% of the animals showed problems. In another one, 100% of the stage 3 higher dose vaccine people had problems. But let's trust everybody, because the New York Times and others, while I'm on the New York Times, let me just share a few thoughts, and then we'll take your calls as you share them with us. Well, I want to make sure also that I get the stuff in on 5G, because this is happening right now at an accelerated rate. First, here is a report from Health Impact News, John Thomas. 20,000 satellites for 5G to be launched, sending focused beams of intense microwave radiation over the entire Earth. Quote, public attention about 5G has been focused on the plans of telecom companies to install millions of small cell towers on electric utility poles, on public buildings and schools, on bus stop shelters, in public parks, anywhere they want, in national parks and on federally owned land. In local urban communities, there would be a cell tower approximately every 500 feet along every single street. As bad as these small cell towers might seem from the standpoint of constant exposure, radio frequency radiation in close proximity to the source, perhaps an even more alarming prospect will be the beaming of millimeter length microwaves at the Earth from thousands of new communication satellites. The FCC gave approval to SpaceX to launch 4,425 satellites. That's Elon Musk's company. The total number of satellites that is expected to be put, and most of those are up now, 20,000 satellites. 5G will use phased array antennas to shoot beams of radiation at cell phones. These satellites will use the same type of phased array antennas as were used by the ground-based 5G systems. This means they will send tightly focused beams of intense microwave radiation at specific 5G device that is on the Earth, and each device will send a beam of radiation back to the satellite. And previous generations of these radio frequency cellular communications use large antenna to send a blanket of radiation in all directions. The lower frequencies, the frequencies they used in the broad distribution of microwaves limited the number of cellular devices that could connect through an individual tall tower. The much shorter length microwaves used for 5G will make it possible to use small phased array antennas to send and receive signals. Phased array antennas consist of clusters of hundreds of tiny antenna that work together to shoot a ray of energy at a target just like a bullet. A cluster of these tiny antennas can be arranged in a 4-inch by 4-inch matrix. The rays of microwaves they produce will be strong enough to pass through walls and human bodies. If they were not strong enough to do this, then everyone with a 5G smartphone would have to stand outside when using the device. Each 5G product will also have multiple phased array antenna, which will be used to create a powerful beam of radiation back to the 5G device mounted on utilities, poles, and towards a specific satellite. These beams of radiation will also be used or needed to be strong enough to pass through walls and human flesh, such as a hand, a head, to reach the intended destination. This means that if you are in a crowded location, such as an airport or on a train, there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of invisible beams of radiation flying through the environment at the speed of light. As people move in that environment, their bodies will be penetrated by numerous beams of radiation as they walk or as other people walk around them with their 5G smartphones. 5G phones will be much more powerful than previous phones. The effective radiation radiated power of a 5G phased array antennas in phones will be 1,000% more powerful than 4G phones. No one will be free from exposure. In addition, 5G beams of microwave radiation will be received and transmitted from new computer equipment, household appliances, and automobiles. Stationary equipment such as Wi-Fi hubs in homes and offices will be permitted to use microwave beams that are 1,500% stronger, that's 300 watts, than the signals from 5G phones, or 150 times stronger than 4G phones. Why is 5G so much more dangerous than previous microwave communications? Simple. The Arthur Fernsberg, a researcher and advocate for limiting radio frequency exposure for the environment, explains the analysis of 5G radiation that was published in Microwave News. He states, quote, when an ordinary electromagnetic field enters the body, it causes change charges to move and currents to flow. But when extremely short electromagnetic pulses enter the body, meaning 5G, something else happens. The moving charges themselves become little antennas that re-radiate the electromagnetic field and send it deeper into the body. These re-radiated waves are called baryon precursors. They become significant when either the power or the phase of the waves changes rapidly enough. 5G will probably satisfy both requirements. This means that the reassurance we are buying or being given that these millimeter waves are too short to penetrate far into the body is not true. It's a lie. And you'll have, you'll have all this coming at you, and nary a politician nor a corporation will be held accountable. And it'll cause environmental catastrophe. So you've been warned, and now here's the latest. Moratorium on 5G. America's scientists, doctors, and healthcare practitioners, a letter to President. This was to President Trump. Of course, he did nothing about it. And this is a broad coalition of scientists and doctors and advocates sent a national 5G resolution letter demanding a moratorium. Of course, that didn't go anywhere. It says, quote, we join with thousands of doctors, scientists, and healthcare providers worldwide who have recently issued appeals for urgent action on 5G to protect public health and call for a moratorium on 5G and any further wireless antenna desensitization until potential hazards for human health and the environment have been fully investigated by scientists independent from the wireless industry, end quote. Quote, the children are our future. The scientific evidence has been clear for decades, and now America has an opportunity to lead the way. And but right now, the FCC, just so you know, has stated that 800,000 antenna sites will be required to fully deploy 5G in the United States, and then it goes globally to 5 million this year, the year we're in. So that's where we're going with this. So thank goodness, you know, I'm in the country, and so have some protection there. But for the average person, you have no protection. You live in the city, you're in a death zone. So just keep that in mind. You can live wherever you want. You have the right to do that. And, quote, this is from Activist Post. The first 5G moratorium request from doctors was issued, but nothing was done. They continue to move further ahead, so it's full raging implementation. So, now concerning who helped sponsor 5G promotion, writes beautiful articles on it, the New York Times. Who supports vaccines? The New York Times. Okay. Well, let me throw this back at you, New York Times, from Adam Johnson, Truth Dig, quote, your complete guide to the New York Times support for U.S.-backed coups in Latin America. And by the way, where in this Congress, on the Senate or Senate or House side, do you find a group of people standing up and saying, no more coups, no more regime changes, no more death squads, no more of the drones that Obama put into effect? No. no, we're not going to allow it. Oh, and by the way, thank goodness we had someone as wise and brilliant as Barack Obama. Quote, only 84 of 2,379 U.S. drone attack victims in Pakistan confirmed al-Qaeda militants. CIA drone strikes in Pakistan have killed nearly 2,400 people. Now it's over 3,000. And it says, but despite U.S. claims that just his, quote, confirmed terrorist targets, only 84 of the victims have been named al-Qaeda members. That means all civilians. Well, we have to add 1.5 million civilians who were displaced or killed, injured in Libya. And then, well, I won't go into all of them, but hey, Obama, wonderful that you got your Nobel Peace Prize. But Henry Kissinger got one too, I believe. So we're killing a lot of people. We're killing 49 innocent civilians for every terrorist. And yet, not a word, not an editorial, nothing. And you can thank the New York Times for that also. So here's the latest from the New York Times. So please, New York Times, before you start telling us that we should be getting vaccines and people who challenge vaccines are somehow in the same league as domestic terrorists, the World Health Organization also had that to say. I just want to bring a few things up. Quote, coup, counter-coup, or attempted coup, counter-coup. 1954, Guatemala coup, you supported it. 1961, Cuba, Bay of Pigs invasion, you supported it. 1964, Brazilian coup, you supported it. 1965, Dominican Republic invasion, you supported it. 1973, Chile coup, you supported it. 1976, Argentina coup, you supported it. 1989, Panama invasion, you supported it. 1994, Haitian invasion, you supported it. 2002, Venezuela attempted coup, you supported it. Honduras, yes. And 2019, Venezuela attempted coup, yes. So, covert involvement of the United States by the CIA or other intelligence services isn't mentioned in any of the Times editorials or any of the coup, about any of the coups. Absent an open, undeniable U.S. military invasion, as in the Dominican Republic or Panama or Grenada, things seem to happen in Latin American countries entirely on their own, without outside forces. But we all know that that's not true. But you never see that mentioned. Who's responsible? Who did it and why? From the New York Times. So I have all the documents here. I have all the documentation. And the New York Times supported that. So should you be reading and supporting a magazine or a newspaper that is nothing more than a propaganda arm for the deep state? It's your choice, your call. But don't tell me you know anything about vaccines. You're functional illiterate. Let's say hello to one of our listeners. Hi, your turn. You're on the air. I believe we have Peter from Tampa, Florida. Peter?
Yes. You go down such a long list of things. I just want to say, when people believe in something, I just want to say, those wonderful people who brought you the Iraq War are at it again. Those wonderful people who brought you Afghanistan are at it again. So anyone who says, oh, 5G is just fine, I just want to say, those wonderful people who put lead in your paint are at it again. It's like, how can people keep believing the government? I think you said it. It's like, what do you think? They're like your good grandfather who's going to come and say, it's all right, you'll be fine. Don't worry, the government's taking care of it. Come on, they have a track record. They should be locked up.
They should be, but they're the ones who are determining who shouldn't be locked up.
Oh,
who should not be investigated. The Clintons should be locked up for life in prison. I'm going to deal with them later this week on their complicity in Rwanda. Nothing that any major media source has ever challenged them for. I'll show you the connections and why they didn't call it a genocide till 900,000 of the Hutu and some Tutsi have been killed. No, the people who are criminals, the heads of Facebook and the heads of these others who engaged in actual lies and breaking the law, like AT&T. I have a whole report on AT&T knowingly worked with the National Intelligence Agency to spy on all Americans. Now, Obama brought that forward and tried to apologize for it, but would not prosecute them. They retroactively cleared them. And so the people who should be held accountable are never held accountable. So maybe I'm wrong. Name me the last head of a pharmaceutical company who knowingly and proven knowingly knew that a product that they were offering, a drug, a vaccine, was dangerous, and it was later found to be dangerous. They paid a fine. Who was held accountable for breach of public confidence? The very same people who are serial offenders are the very same people making your vaccines and drugs today. So,
the
yes.
The opioid thing was just in the news last week. I forget the name of the company.
Yeah, well, what we have, and this is unfortunate, we have a country that is breaking apart, and we're going to do what we can to show you who's doing the breaking and what we have to do to push back. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call. Okay, and by the way, I'm going to share with you tomorrow a commentary from Chris Hedges, which is really brilliant. But if you wonder why nothing gets done on the public's behalf, here's just one reason. This is from Sludge. It's Representative Elliot Ingalls' committee has jurisdiction over arms export, and he's gotten significant campaign donations from the defense industry and pro-Israeli interests. Quote, the new chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, which oversees arms controls and exports, has received campaign contributions from the U.S. defense industry and from interests identified as being pro-Israel, a top buyer of American weapons and a recipient of significant American military assistance. Ingalls, he's a Democrat from New York. It was in the ideological middle of the 115th Congress Democratic Caucus, but his foreign affairs views are more conservative than the average Democrats, especially when it comes to Israel and Palestine. As documented by the Progressive, Ingalls pushed to defund the National Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees in the Near East, and he co-sponsored the Anti-Israeli Boycott Act, which prohibits U.S. companies from joining boycotts of Israel called by international organizations like the United Nations. Meanwhile, the 15-term representative has benefited from campaign funding from defense industry PAC and from PACs and individuals identified by the Center for Responsive Politics as being pro-Israel. And then I have here, the United States exported more than $500 million worth of weapons and military equipment to Israel in last year. It also signed an agreement that year worth $38 billion in military assistance to Israel. $38 billion. So here's a question. What inner city development in the United States has been given $38 billion to de-ghettoize? You wouldn't need $38 billion. You could do it with $1 billion. Well, we have at least 100 cities that have major ghettos. If we just took Newark, and we took Detroit, and we took Baltimore, and we took Camden, New Jersey, and Compton, California, as just examples. If we took to build humanistic, holistic, support living centers where people could actually live and be counseled and get them off drugs, and clean them up, get them psychological counseling, and get them reoriented to making proper decisions, we could do all that. But no money goes for that. But I have all the industries here, $70 million, quote, for the Secretary of Defense to provide the government of Israel the procurement of the Iron Dome, and it goes on and on. Just one procurement after another. So if you're in the military and business, you want someone in power, and he's in power. Is it fair? It's not fair, but it's what is. So that's where we're at. I appreciate you all listening. I'll be back tomorrow with a whole lot more of laying out the good news and the bad news and what we can do about the bad news by being honest about it and not aligning based upon our politics or proclivities towards allowing someone else to make our choices for us. Have a nice day, everyone.